And welcome to today's Job Seeker Broadcast. Our topic is, I'm not getting any responses. So how is it going in your job search these days? Are employers beating on your door? Or are you filling out applications but just getting no responses at all? When the economy is slow, employers hold back and are very choosy who they hire. Well, today's broadcast will help you advance your search by giving you practical tips on how to move out in front of the line. And to help me discuss this topic of increasing employer responses, I'm joined by a special guest, George Dutch, out of Ottawa, Canada. George is one of our 12 preferred counselors featured on our website. And you can see George's picture and bio. Just click Preferred Counselors on our toolbar. Hello there, George.
Hello, John.
It's good to have you today. And you have a very impressive biography here that I enjoy reading to our audience. You've been helping men and women advance in their careers since 1992, and that's well over 20 years. Your transition, career transition company is entitled Job Joy, and you host your own weekly radio show entitled The Career Connection. You consult for Fortune 500 companies, all levels of government agencies, nonprofits, ministry organizations, and small business firms. You have authored two publications, Job Joy and Boot Camp, and you have been featured on our broadcast for well over a year, and we're delighted to have you as part of the team here. Now, for the first 30 minutes of our show, George and I will talk about our topic, I'm not getting employer responses, and then we'll take a short break and begin to answer job hunting questions which we receive before and during the show. So, George, let's jump in and talk about improving employer responses. And right out of the chute, I think we need to clarify that for any job hunter, there are two approaches, the passive and the active approach to job hunting. And, George, when you and I were preparing for this broadcast, you said something that just it was kind of one of those lightning bolt flashes that, in your opinion, the whole job market has been turned upside down because of the last 10 years of several economic meltdowns. So tell us what you mean by the job market is being turned upside down.
I'm happy to do that, John. 15, 20 years ago, a passive job search was very effective. You could throw your resume online, apply for jobs, and you were sure to get lots of calls from internal and external recruiters. If you had any kind of skills or job experience or education, you were sure to get calls for jobs. Because the economy was hot and expanding, and at that time, employers, there was tremendous demand from employers to fill positions, especially in the IT, telecom, and high-tech sector. There was such a shortage of skilled people stateside in those positions that they were desperate to hire people. So it was very easy to get a job. As more and more people were sucked into the IT sector, it left lots of openings in other sectors like manufacturing and retail and public administration and education and so on. So it was a very hot job market and very easy to get hired online with the passive job search. All of that changed, of course, about 10, 12 years ago when the high-tech bubble burst, then the housing bubble burst, then we had the meltdown of the financial markets in 2008. Ever since then, our economy has been in a recession, or it has been stagnant at best, except for a few odd pockets where things are still cooking economically, like the oil and gas sector in Texas, for example. Otherwise, the passive job search is no longer effective because there is no longer the employer demand there used to be. When the economy slows down, it dampens employer demand. So employers aren't going online to look for people anywhere near to the extent they used to 10, 15, 20 years ago. On top of that, there's been a social phenomenon that many of our listeners have participated in. Many people over the last 10 years have gone back to school to upgrade their skills. So now instead of there being a shortage of skilled labor, there's an oversupply of skilled labor. There are literally, for example, millions and millions of MBAs out there. So employers are no longer desperate. They're not looking for people. They don't have the same demand. And now there's an oversupply of skilled people when the economy is slow. This has changed the job market dynamics dramatically. And we no longer have this hot expanding economy. We have a cool shrinking economy. So the supply and demand economics have turned upside down. And now job seekers need to be more proactive, more active, in their job search.
Yeah. And you and I have used these terms. We probably ought to define them. Passive means that you wait until there's a vacancy posted, and then you follow the instructions and apply. Active means, or proactive, that you go and track down an opportunity that may not be posted. It's otherwise called the hidden job. Hidden meaning it's not a posted vacancy. Now, George, you and I agree that there are some exceptions to the general rule that we're saying. We're not talking about entry-level jobs or positions that just don't require a high level of skill. Those jobs will always be in demand, but they don't pay much. And we're not talking about unique, hard-to-find, skilled positions that employers have to hire headhunters to search high and low to find people. And those employers pay a hefty fee. They pay around one-third of that person's annual income. So a person's getting paid, let's say, $100,000 a year. Well, that company's getting socked with over $30,000 just for one hire, which is incredible in a tight market. Our comments today are not covering those areas. What we're talking about is good-paying and fulfilling career jobs. And we're saying to get these kind of jobs today, we need to be involved in an active, proactive job search strategy. Right, George?
We certainly do. You know, John, every day I talk to people that are persisting with the passive job search. They see, this is what I often hear, George, I saw this posting online. It was perfect for me. It's like they had me in mind when they wrote it. I sent in my resume a month ago. I haven't heard anything. And in addition, that posting is still up. What is going on?
Yeah.
I'll say, well, look, I'm not the CEO of the company. I don't know what's going on. Call their HR department. Maybe you'll get through. And if you get through, ask them if they received your resume. So sometimes they will call, sometimes they will get through, and they'll hear things like, we don't know if we got your resume because we got 15,000 resumes for that position. We're not filling the position, we've canceled it. Or, oh, is that posting still up? It should have been taken down 6 months ago. I guess IT is so busy they haven't taken down the posting yet. As a job searcher, we tend to assume that these big job boards, these large systems work flawlessly in our favor. But anybody who's worked in a large organization knows that the systems don't work flawlessly, and large systems rarely work in favor of the end user.
Well, we certainly know that when we think about our healthcare system and all the boondoggles that have cropped up because of confusion on the website. And so it's good to know that even on a smaller issue such as job postings, that companies can have problems. And George, you quoted verbatim the exact same things I hear from clients when they go online. And as a matter of fact, I would add one more. The comment that, oh, yeah, that's right. Well, did you get the updated description? Or did you get the old description? Because that job description has changed. And that's the conflict between middle management or senior management and the HR department that's posting the vacancies. I think it also is fair to say that the majority of companies out there, 80% of companies, have 20 or less employees. And 20 employees may not justify a full-time human resource department. So that means that the company's ability to have a robust vacancy posting of positions that they have available, whether you go on their website or whether you go to some job posting board, is probably not going to be the case. And so there are many, many, many positions that are out there and available, if you know where to look, that are not not being posted. So having said all this, George, let's go to the three most important steps that a job seeker should do to move from a passive approach, which is now outdated, it's not going to work, to a more proactive approach. Can you get us started?
Sure, I'm happy to do that. I think the first thing to do is to get a target. It's a lot easier to hit a target when you've got one. So I recommend that job seekers identify 10 to 20 preferred employers, organizations they'd like to work for. And they can find the names of those employers, those companies, very easily by doing a simple Google search. You know, if they're an accountant, they might, some kind of accounting professional, they can do a simple Google search. If they live in Dallas, they can say, for example, the best employers in Dallas for accounting professionals, and substitute the profession of accounting for any other job category, no matter where you live. So you want to come up with a list of 10 to 20 preferred employers. Look at the companies that are listed, go to their websites, make sure they're doing something that interests you, make sure they've got the kind of corporate culture that aligns with your own preferences and priorities and values, make sure they're within a commutable distance of home. Use some simple criteria to narrow down your list to 10 or 20 preferred employers. The next step then is you need to identify the person or persons in the company that have the power to hire you, a hiring manager, we call them. It's a bit of a misleading term. They don't spend all their time hiring. They spend all their time managing plans, priorities, programs, projects, budgets, schedules, sometimes equipment and machinery, but on top of that, they have to hire. That person has the power to hire you.
We're not talking about the human resource department,
right?
Now, why not?
Avoiding them, unless you're looking for a job in human resources, then the director of HR would be your hiring manager. But
now,
you're looking for the person that
you would
not report
to. Why would you not go to HR?
You wouldn't go to HR because they don't have the power to hire you. They're there to facilitate hiring, to make sure that the hiring manager who has the power to do the hiring, that has the final say, doesn't commit any faux pas or any mistakes that might expose the company to liability. So they're there to protect the company from the liability of hiring employees or having employees. That's what HR is there for. They're not there to hire people. That's a mistaken notion that people have. They're there to facilitate the hiring process so that the company doesn't get exposed to liability.
Yeah,
so it's
now,
much better.
In the passive job search, usually it is HR that posts the vacancy that the hiring manager indicated needed to be filled. We'll pick this up after the break, George.
Sure.
Okay, John, we have a short 2-minute break. Today we've been talking about job search tips, but you do a lot more for men and women who are struggling with mid-career issues.
That's right, Evan. Since the mid-70s, I've been counseling men and women who have hit a dead end in their career and feel like they don't have any possibility of finding a fulfilling job.
So you're saying that there is hope for some of us who are stressed out or don't like our work?
That's right, Evan. I think we're all aware that over 50% of employed adults state that they do not enjoy their work and that they would look for another career if they just knew how.
Well, I know you can't give us a silver bullet to know how to do it, but can you toss us some nuggets to ease the pain?
Certainly, Evan. What we have found in over 30 years and 30,000 adult clients is that a good job fit requires two important basic ingredients.
Okay, you have my attention. What are those two basics?
The two basics for a good job fit are, first, having a passion for what you do, something you really like, something which gives your life meaning and purpose.
Okay, I guess I figured that one out, but what is the second basic?
The second basic for a good job fit is something you are naturally good at doing, something that fits your wiring, something that brings out the best in you.
So you're saying that you must like the job and also be naturally good at doing it, right?
That's the starting point, Evan.
Okay. Well, we need to get back to our broadcast. We'll talk more about finding a job you can really be good at doing at our next break. If you just tuned in, our Job Seeker Weekly broadcast is sponsored by the IDAC Group, hosted by job search and career advancement expert John Bradley. John has been coaching men and women since the mid-70s to find fulfilling work. I'm Evan Newman. You can join our discussion today by emailing us your job search questions. Those questions received during the live broadcast will be given John's priority. Our address for questions is jobseeker@idacgroup.com. That's jobseeker@idacgroup.com. John, let's pick up where we left off.
And we're back to our Job Seeker broadcast. My special guest today is Counselor George Dutch from Ottawa, Canada. And George is one of our 12 preferred counselors featured on our website. If you just tuned in, you can see George's picture and bio. And our topic is I'm not getting employer responses. And so we're focusing on the basic steps to turn that whole thing around and in a proactive way dramatically increase your employer responses so that you can get hired in a short time. And George, as you and I were talking about three steps that will dramatically improve, you mentioned the first step is to get a list of the types of companies that a person is attracted to, likes what they do, has a sense of value for what they do. And what I didn't hear you say, to clarify, is at the time you choose those companies, you don't know if they have vacancies in the position you want. All you know is that these companies and organizations represent the type of culture, the type of team, the product or service that really gets you excited. And now it's important to dig deep in those organizations to find the departments and the jobs that you could perform for that organization. Okay, George, well, that's a little review. Now, take us further down the road here.
Yeah, I think it's important to understand that we're not talking about job postings. We're not talking about the formal resume submission to a job posting process. We're talking about being proactive and prospecting for job opportunities, not job vacancies.
Hey, yeah, there's a good word, prospecting, yes.
Yeah, and we're just before the break, you said to me, this doesn't involve HR. No, we're bypassing HR because we're not going through the formal job vacancy process. That's the process managed by HR. We're trying to target specific people in the organization, hiring managers, people that you would report to, people that have the power to hire you, for job opportunities, not job vacancies. So the first step is to target specific companies or organizations, private, public, or nonprofit, that you want to work in. Identify the people in those companies you'd report to, the person or persons that have the power to hire you that you would report to. And the third step.
Okay, before you go third step, this is a very important key here. You gave us a source, one source, Global Business Browser, as a place that is going to list for the job hunter the actual names of the department heads. Now, there's a little disclaimer on this wonderful service, George, and that is it's not a free and easy and available to anyone. How does one access this?
Well, thanks for reminding me of that. Yeah, I think this is a wonderful resource for any job seeker. It's called the One Source Global Business Browser, as you mentioned. I know that's a mouthful. It's the word one rather than the number one. One Source Global Business Browser. It's a database that lists every organization in America in every location, and it lists every manager in that company in that particular location with their job title, their name, their contact details. The qualifier is this business browser is not available on Google for free. It's a subscriber-based service, but you can access it for free because it's sold to large organizations like public libraries. So anybody listening, I would encourage them, if they want to use a tool like this, to call their local library and ask them how they can get access to the OneSource Global Business Browser, which usually means either going into a library branch and sitting at one of their computer terminals, or if you can access the library services remotely from your home computer, you can get access to the OneSource Global Business Browser. You would type in the names of those 10 companies or organizations that you're targeting for your particular city or location, and it would list every manager in that organization at that particular location. It's a one-stop shop for getting the names and contact details of managers across America.
Yes, I have seen this. It is incredible. It is absolutely awesome. Now, they are not the only service that do this, but I agree, George, for the job hunter to get names of organizations and more important, to get the names of the department heads. This Global Business Browser service is just incredible. Now, we're ready to go to step three. This is the punchline. Give it to us.
Yes, the most important step in the proactive job search is to get face-to-face with that hiring manager, because you dramatically increase your chances of getting hired when you get face-to-face with this person for a number of reasons. The first reason is that by getting face-to-face with that person, you are giving them a chance to get to know you. The biggest factor you've got going against you when you look for a job is when people don't know you, they fear you. It's not what's on your resume that concerns them, it's what's not there. You know, will they like you? Can they communicate with you? Are you able to get along with them and other people?
Yeah, are you honest?
Do you have energy and enthusiasm? Are you honest? Do you have integrity? There's a lot, you know, and every hiring manager is a little bit different. They have different priorities or criteria for evaluating you. But basically, hiring is a risk assessment exercise. And humans prefer to assess risk when it comes to hiring by meeting somebody face-to-face and getting a real sense of that person. Now, people are going to tell you, hey, there are no jobs. And they mean there's no jobs today. But there's always jobs and there's always hiring in America because of a number of factors that create jobs. This is what we mean when we talk about job opportunities versus job vacancies. There might not be any job vacancies today, but I guarantee you there will be job vacancies or job opportunities in 2 days, 2 weeks, or 2 months because of the factors that drive hiring. And you can certainly speak to that point, John.
Well, yes. When we get to that stage our job search coaching, the key to identifying organizations that are going to have more opportunities, it's one word, it's growth. If an organization is growing, then there is a desperate need yesterday for skilled and competent individuals. And so if we're trying to coach the job seeker to make best use of their time, in addition to choosing companies and organizations that they like, that they're attracted to, among all of those, there's another screening factor, and that is which are experiencing a robust growth spurt. Those are going to be hiring, and those are the ones that probably are going to be more aggressive in looking. But because the economy is somewhat slow at this point, they're going to approach this very cautiously and give a lot of preference to inside referrals, people that know people that know people. And I think that's what you're alluding to, George, is if a job hunter takes the time to start a genuine relationship, a bonding process with a hiring person, knowing that in a few weeks or months, something is going to open up because the organization is growing, that employer now feels, quote, feels more comfortable with that individual, that person is in the front chair, and more likely to be considered when there is something that's starting to flesh out as a actual, we need to hire somebody. And it's all about that intangible. There's that, the word sometimes you use, that chemistry, that appeal, that rapport, that trust. All of those terms are an employer's informal process of just a gut check that gives them the assurance, well, I've got someone that I feel good about, therefore it's worth my time to put them through the formal interviewing process. Employers hate that cold, austere process of scanning a resume and then meeting somebody who's prepped themselves to death to, you know, and with the elevator speeches and with the star-studded resume and so on. They're just down-to-earth people, and they want to hire in the same way that they just get acquainted with someone for the first time. That's a mouthful, George. You sent me off on a tangent. Did I go where you wanted me to go?
Yes, I think it's very important for our listeners to understand that managers are waiting for you to walk through the door and connect with them. And in previous broadcasts, we've talked about how to get face-to-face with them, and I'm sure some of your listeners are wondering about that. And we talked about that magic number 250, because 250 is the number of people that the average American knows in their circle of family and friends and people they've worked with in the past or work with now, people that they go to church with or go to fitness class with, people in their neighborhood, their doctor, their dentist, their car mechanic. They know a lot more people than they realize. And their job is to make it easy for those people in their goodwill network to help them. And the way they do that is by giving them that target. Tell everybody you know, everybody you meet, exactly what you're looking for, the type of job you're looking for, be specific in terms of job titles, and the organizations you want to work for. And tell them, here's what I want to do, here's where I want to do it, and then always ask this magic question. Do you know anybody I can talk to? Do you know anyone I can talk to?
Right.
And if you tell 50 people exactly what you're looking for, each one of those 50 people knows another 250 people, do the math, you've got thousands of people at your fingertips now.
Right.
And those people will tell you amazing things. It's amazing who people know. It always amazes me who people know. And you'll hear
now before,
things like,
well, just one thing before we get the magic website that is going to dramatically expand our reach here. I think we need to clarify that these contacts, okay, you know Susie Jones, and Susie Jones has a friend that works for Nike, and you want to go to work for Nike. So what you want is Susie Jones to give you an entree to Mike Douglas that heads up the new product development division. And through that common contact, you want to have a meeting with Mike Douglas. Now, we have to be very clear. When you call Mike Douglas, unless Mike has a posted vacancy, you can't ask for an employment interview and bring your resume. We'll pick this up after the break.
We're taking a short 2-minute break to ask John Bradley some more questions about moving ahead when you're stuck in a lousy job going nowhere. John, in our last break, you gave us two basics which any fulfilling job must have.
That's right, Evan. Every fulfilling job must be something you like, something which gives you meaning and purpose. A second basic is having job duties which bring out the best in your natural strengths.
Okay, John, I've been thinking about that natural strengths part. What is the difference between a skill a person has learned from previous work experience and a natural strength or talent?
Well, Evan, each of us has a set of innate strengths which are part of our DNA. When we do career aptitude testing, we look for those and then match them to the things a person likes to do.
So what are some examples of these natural strengths?
Well, we have researched this extensively and have a database of over 90,000 career matches. In that range of careers, we find 54 distinct natural talents, which represent all of those 90,000 options. 90,000 career matches. Is that a big or small number? I was thinking of something like a million or so.
Well, actually, Evan, 90,000 is a very big number. Most all career tests commonly used by colleges only have 2,000 to 3,000 career options in the database. So 90,000 is huge in comparison. I think you were probably recalling employment statistics regarding millions of jobs rather than career options.
Okay, I see. So how does a person plow their way through 90,000 career options to find a fit? Maybe we can take up your answer at the next break.
Yes, sure.
If you just tuned in, our Job Seeker Weekly broadcast is sponsored by the IDAC Group, hosted by job search and career advancement expert John Bradley. John has been coaching men and women since the mid-70s to find fulfilling work. I'm Evan Newman. You can join our discussion today by emailing us your job search questions. Those questions received during the live broadcast will be given John's priority. Our address for questions is jobseeker@idacgroup.com. That's jobseeker@idacgroup.com. John, let's return to our show.
And we are back to our broadcast. We're talking about improving your employer responses. And to discuss this topic, I'm joined by Counselor George Dutch from Ottawa, Canada. George is one of our very best 12 preferred counselors featured on our website. And you can see George's picture and bio. Just click on our website, Preferred Counselors. George, we are talking about that third step in getting access to opportunities that are not going to be posted as vacancies, opportunities that the active job hunter needs to learn how to pursue. And we were just clarifying that when a person gets a name of an inside manager for a department that he or she wants to work for, and then finds a mutual acquaintance, someone in the company that the job seeker knows, that inside person then makes a social network connection facilitating a future meeting. The content of that future meeting cannot be, I'm coming to your department with my resume to talk about a vacancy in your department. There is no vacancy. So, George, I'm curious, how do you train your clients to word the purpose for why I want to go see that Nike new product division manager?
Yes, what I do is I advise my clients to focus on that manager's pain points. In other words, it's their needs and priorities that matter. So what's needed is a little bit of research on my client's end to understand the sector. In this case, it would be the retail shoe sector and the particular division that person works in, what their responsibilities are, and to understand it at an industry level. What kinds of challenges and problems and issues are getting in the way of that manager or that company achieving their corporate goals and objectives? And just to understand that at a high level. And then to approach that person, sometimes with an approach letter or with a phone call, or if they meet them at an event, a community event, is to raise that whole the challenges in that.
George, I lost you in the telephone connection here, and I think you were talking more specifically about the employer's pain point, something I call it the obstacle, the issue that is preventing the employer from getting from point A, where they are now, to that future goal where there's a larger market share, there are more opportunities for growth and development. And so this pursuit is what the caller, the job seeker, is attempting to engage with. Now, the secret to this is that you've selected a topic that the job or the department head is wrestling with every day. That department head is scratching around trying to figure out how they're going to overcome this issue of foreign competition, new legislation, higher medical benefit costs, a new competitor in another state, or even some tougher regulations that cost more to produce the same product. All of those factors are what managers are struggling with every day. And if the job seeker is aware of those and then seeks to engage the manager in discussion, we have a really fun, exciting, enlivening discussion going on here. It's not about resumes. It's not about vacancies. But it's all about building rapport, building trust, building familiarity. And so that chemistry, the positive chemistry is flowing, and we're having good exchange going. And the idea is that the job seeker, provided there's good rapport and good chemistry going, the job seeker needs to maintain a continuity of relationship with that department head so that the department head, when there's an opportunity, is able to reconnect. And so,
John, can I just
three...
add a comment to that?
Yeah.
I'm back. I'm sorry, but my line dropped unexpectedly. But I caught the last bit of what you were talking about, and I think it's very important to emphasize that the purpose of that meeting is not to get a job, but as you said, to build rapport, to establish rapport and to maintain it. In other words, to get into the manager's pipeline. Because sooner or later, usually sooner than people expect, an opportunity will open up. And by having established that rapport and building on it, the manager is going to think of you as the person that will help them solve that problem when the opportunity comes up rather than somebody else, because you're in the pipeline, you've established the rapport, you've got the trust with them, they feel safe with you.
Absolutely, yes. You know, I'm thinking of the image, George, that if somebody's looking for a job, let's say a summer job, and they're driving out in the country and they see a field and they notice that there's a grove of apple trees and those apples are starting to turn color, that person should be thinking, this farmer is going to need somebody to help him pick all those apples. And because I notice that the apples are starting to turn color, that farmer is probably on the lookout. And so it's worth my time to establish rapport with that farmer just in case he doesn't have his full schedule and inventory of farmhands to pick apples. The job hunter is skilled on seeing the tree that is turning, the fruit is turning color, knows what he's looking for, and then makes it his or her business to establish the rapport with that farmer. So that's just a little picture of what we're talking about. And this image of the apple turning color is nothing more than finding out that the organization is, in fact, growing. Now, George, before your phone line was cut off, you were using the term pain points or pressure points as a topic. And then while you were gone, I was expanding on that. I use the term impact issue. Issues that are impacting the growth and development of the organization. What are some examples of these pain points or pressure points that you use when you're training clients?
Well, I think I heard you list some of them. Those are very common ones. But they could also be internally driven pain points. For example, turnover. Employers are losing people all the time for all kinds of reasons. For example, people die unexpectedly or retire unexpectedly, especially if they were lucky enough to win that Mega Millions lottery last night. And people get married, and then their spouse gets transferred. And, you know, managers, one of their biggest headaches is losing people, especially key people, at the most inopportune times. So they're always on the lookout to fill their pipeline with good people because they know from experience they could lose people very quickly and they need to replace them. And they haven't got 12 to 16 months or however long it takes to go through a formal job hiring process where a job is posted and they have to go through the lengthy process of collecting resumes, reviewing them, scheduling interviews, and all the rest of it. So they need people in their pipeline.
Right. Okay, now we're building up to the point where you're going to tell us that incredible web address that tells us what person we went to high school with that works for Nike.
Yes, but why don't we hold off on that so that our listeners will wait with bated breath for that magic website. And let's take some of these concepts and apply them to a real-world problem, John. So let's talk about Robert in Branson, Missouri, who sent us this email, and maybe you could respond to this. He says, I just graduated from college and have been volunteering in a community service nonprofit. There are no jobs in this organization, but I would like to work here if there was a way. How can I find a similar job? Now, I'm sure that Robert just graduated from college. He's got a volunteer experience. If he starts sending his resume out there, he'll be one of those people that won't get any response from his resume.
Right.
So he really needs to become proactive in his job search. What would your advice be to Robert?
Well, I want to commend Robert that he is taking a very proactive step of volunteering. I really don't like the word volunteering because it positions you as a gopher. And what I, in case some of our listeners are still in college, which is a wonderful time to do the concept of volunteering, but I like to use the word field experience, so it has an educational bent to it, which means then the employer has an obligation to give a higher quality of work experience than just some gopher project that nobody else wants to do. So I would say step one, that Robert needs to go to the senior person in the organization where he's established rapport, and he needs to have a meeting to say, by my time working with your organization, I have realized that this is really what I love to do, and within between now and 6 months from now, I would like to be employed. Now, you know many organizations that are doing similar community service work. Could you give me some referrals to individuals? And also, could I use you as a reference? Now, that step is going to do two things. It's going to do the obvious, where it's going to get a very strong, warm lead to other individuals, and if in fact that Robert has done a good job as a volunteer, it's reasonable to assume out of the milk of human kindness that that manager will say, you know what, I'll call ahead for you. We'll pick this up after the break.
Hello, this is Evan Newman back for a final 2 minute broadcast break. John, in our previous break, you were talking about a database in your career match system of 90,000 career options. I ask, how does a person discover their best career or two from 90,000 possibilities?
Well, Evan, let's begin our advice by playing to our natural strengths, our hardwiring.
Well, what is so important about your emphasis on the hardwired part? Are there soft-wired traits?
Yes, we have both hard and soft-wired traits. We have those innate traits which make us who we are. These are our hardwired traits. We also have skills we have learned on the job or in a college degree program. These are the softwired traits. When you choose a career, you want to put your hardwired, your innate traits in first place.
Okay, so start with the hardwired traits. But you mentioned degree programs. I'm thinking of engineering, teaching, nursing, dental hygienist. Are those examples of learning soft-wired traits?
Yes, Evan.
Each of those occupations represent advanced academic training, which prepares a person with skills to use on the job.
So what is the problem? Why are you separating these classroom skills from one's innate skills and choosing one's ideal career? Are you saying that a person cannot learn innate skills in the classroom?
Exactly, Evan. By definition, our hard wiring is part of our genetic code. On the other hand, a person can learn precision detail dental skills or problem-solving engineering skills or even classroom teaching skills. But every high school student will tell you there are some good teachers and there are some okay teachers and, well, there are some who should look to do something else.
So you mean to say that there are some naturally gifted teachers, dentists, engineers, nurses, and so on?
That's right.
Well, wait a minute. Why would someone choose a career and then pursue a degree to do something which he or she was not hardwired gifted to do? It doesn't make sense.
Well, sadly, it happens every fall term when campuses start up. Schools do not test for innate talent. That is, the hardwiring. They test for academic ability to learn a subject matter.
Wow, that seems like a lot of money spent and a lot of debt for the wrong profession.
Well, that's one way to look at it, Evan. We find that the average person under 30 years of age has enough reserve energy to make do if they lack the innate hardwired skills needed for a job. So as long as a person is 30 or younger and has a lot of self-discipline, they can do reasonably well in most any profession where they have received academic training.
Okay, what's the rub?
Well, the rub is that when the person is on the job, they are not able to move beyond the classroom skills they have learned unless they return to the classroom. They don't intuitively, in their core, understand what they're doing.
Wow.
Yep. They are limited in their ability to adapt and grow beyond the classroom instruction given.
You mean that a person who is not wired for the job is like a computer program which cannot intuitively grow beyond the original designs?
Yes. Not to intuitively grow on the job causes internal stress and certainly does not lead to fulfillment.
Well, John, this has been a most interesting journey.
Thanks, Evan.
I want to encourage any of you who are feeling the stress of a dead-end job to go to our website, www.idacgroup.com, and make contact with one of our preferred counselors. Each of these seasoned men and women are professionals at helping you discover your wiring. You will see the reference Preferred Counselors at the top of our toolbar. John, we still have the last quarter of our show. Let's return.
You bet. Let's do it.
If you just tuned in, our Job Seeker Weekly broadcast is sponsored by the IDAC Group, hosted by job search and career advancement expert John Bradley, who has been coaching men and women since the mid-70s to find fulfilling work. I'm Evan Newman. And now, John, let's return to our show.
And we're back. We're talking about how to improve your employer referrals. And I'm sorry, your employer responses. And I'm joined by Counselor George Dutch from Ottawa, Canada. George is one of our selected 12 preferred counselors whom we've selected from nationwide over 600 professionals. He's featured on our website. And you can see George's picture and bio. Just click on Preferred Counselors. George, we're wrapping up the steps that are key to dramatically impacting one's success in getting employer responses. And just before the break, you were reading the job seeker question from Robert in Branson, and we were talking about how to maximize his volunteering experience. So I was mentioning that by Robert meeting with his most senior individual in the organization, indicating that he wants a position similar in so-and-so, as so-and-so in the organization, could he get referrals? Well, if he's done a good job volunteering, then it's reasonable to assume that that senior person will not only give him names, but say, hey, I'll call Fred and let him know that you're going to be contacting him. That is not an unusual response on an employer's part. You don't ask for that, but it's reasonable to assume. The other thing is, if the organization really likes the individual, likes Robert, they better get with the program because they're getting this indication that he is going to be moving on. So I would just say right out of the chute, Robert wants to network with similar organizations and kind of give it one last shot in his current organization. George, what did I miss here on this one?
No, I think that's excellent advice. I would encourage Robert to also sit down and think about the kinds of issues or problems or pressures that he sees being addressed in the nonprofit sector in that community. What kinds of typical or chronic or acute problems seem typical for that sector of the economy? Because that's something he can talk about when he gets face to face with managers of other community service organizations in that community, is that at a high level he can talk about the pressures and problems he saw at that particular organization that might be symptomatic of the kinds of problems in the sector throughout that community. So Remember, he's trying to tap into the pain points of the other managers. They've got corporate goals and objectives. They've got problems, challenges, issues, pressures that are getting in the way of achieving those goals. And Robert has to help them achieve those goals.
Yes.
About their needs and priorities, not about his.
And I think you and I would agree that Robert has a couple steps ahead. He is a couple steps ahead of anyone else who just graduated from college and wants to work in a similar position, but has not done any kind of field education, internship, or volunteering. So this idea of getting involved in the organization is the way to go if you're still a college student. It's the way to just about guarantee that you'll have a job before you graduate. The word volunteering is something high school students ought to be doing, not college students. So that's my bias on that one. Mm-hmm. You got any other job seeker questions, George?
I do. Here's one from Diane in Portland. She says, I've just completed a major public service advocacy project for low-income families, and I now want to explore a more stable job. I have a law degree and need help getting a job where I can use my degree. Now, I can imagine Diane looking online in Portland for any kind of job requiring a law degree, sending off her resume, and not getting any responses. So what should she do in that case?
Well, I think you caught the glitch in job hunt. If she has on her resume and puts on her application form this image that she is a law student graduate, it's going to create a brand, an image that may not be conducive unless something she's seeking requires a law degree. So I would assume that for her advocacy project, the law degree was a positive thing. But if she's looking for customer service jobs, the company's going to be afraid to hire her because she may turn around and be adversarial to the company once she finds out that they're doing things that are maybe not as appropriate. So I would say that what Diane should be doing is identifying similar organizations. It almost sounds like a broken record here, but similar types of organizations doing comparable public service, comparable advocacy work. She needs to go back to the organization that she just left, ask for referrals to those organizations, and then following the referral, I think she needs to begin the process of establishing relationships, looking for the organizations that are growing. Now, one thing that I have found that's more true in the Northwest, I'm not sure if we could say this is true across the board in Canada and the United States, but when you have a slow economy, nonprofits that base their revenues to a large extent upon donations and charitable contributions, they're hurting. And so Diane does have to do some research to find out which nonprofits are barely hanging in there versus those that planned well ahead, and because of their esteem among their constituents, are just sailing right through and moving right along. So that's my shot with Diane. What are your thoughts, George?
I think one of the obvious places she should look if she wants a stable job is to look at the different levels of government, federal, state, and municipal, that have responsibilities related to family services or housing for families. That would be an obvious place for her to look. Either they're involved in policy work or regulatory work or planning work related to housing for families or other types of family services. That would probably be a good fit for her.
That'd be
She could also look at organizations that are involved in providing the housing, such as construction companies and things like that, that are involved in contracts and tenant agreements and things like that, where her law degree would be useful. So I think she has lots of opportunities open to her, lots of paths that she can take. But again, she should be careful about looking for a job posting and sending off a resume and not hearing anything. She should be proactive in prospecting for those kind of opportunities based on what she learned in her advocacy project, the kinds of problems and challenges she encountered that she can then apply to employers in order to help them with their particular corporate goals and objectives, whether they're in the
Absolutely.
Public, private, or nonprofit sector.
George, we've run out of time. Thank you. Thank you for very enlightening show.
And so that wraps up our Job Seeker broadcast for this week. Our host has been job search and career advancement expert John Bradley. John is president and founder of the IDAC Group. He has been helping mid-career men and women find their sweet spot since 1973. John has authored 4 career advancement books. He led the development team for the premier IDAC Career Match instrument, which has assisted over 30,000 career seekers nationwide. John has personally trained over 600 counselors, college professors, and consultants in career advancement and job search. And he's personally selected 12 of these 600, whom he highlights on his website. These men and women are independent practitioners whom John has personally trained. They're not employees nor affiliated with the IDAC Group. They have not paid any fee to be featured. They are good, honest professionals who have gained John's approval over many years of successful practice. I'm Evan Newman, and I invite you to join us next week at the same time for our next live broadcast. Do you know someone who is frustrated in their job search? Why not send them a tweet, email, or Facebook note about our free broadcast? Maybe your friend can learn something which will land them that next job. We invite you to participate in our broadcast by sending your job search questions during our live broadcast. These questions received during the live will receive John's priority attention. Thanks for listening. Best wishes, and may God bless you in your job search.